This is News in No Time, Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, the Army to retain problem enlistees. Online stores charge your surfing habits. States limit cell phone use by drivers and tracking your driving teenager. Joining us from our New York bureau, Amy Barnett, managing editor of Teen People magazine. Jeff Obafemi-Carr, founder of the artistic and artistic director of the Amin-Ra Theater in Nashville, joins us via phone. And George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, comes to us from Maryland. All right, folks, we're going to talk a little bit about something that's interesting. We've been talking about the problem of the military getting new enlistees. The problem has become so rampant now, quite frankly, in terms of them keeping people, that the Army is suggesting now that they are going to have to keep people that they heretofore would have deemed as problematic. And this is including folks who are, and I underline the question of problematic, what they had deemed before as too unfit for service, pregnant, alcohol and drug abusers, generally unsatisfactory performances, now will have to be kicked up to a higher commander. Usually the battalion commander would take this on. Now it goes to a brigadier commander. The Pentagon is saying basically it's another set of eyes reviewing these cases. But George Curry, it sounds to me like folks are in trouble just in sheer numbers at this point.
No question about it. And what it means is that they're getting people in, I think, that obviously are not fully qualified. And that's therefore you see the biggest jump, I think, it was the initial training. I mean, I think their goal is to get about 12% of people who don't make it. And 2004 it was 13.9 and then increased to 17.4. So that's where we see the biggest drop. There's also a drop in people are failing to complete their terms. And what this means is basically is that the person who worked closest with the soldier had been making the decision before. Now they're kicking up to the person who commands like 3,000 people farther removed from it. They claim it's another set of eyes, but what it really is that they're trying to keep more people in there who normally would not be in.
Well, maybe, you know, if more of the country understood why in the hell we are in this meaningless war, depleting our own coffers in a difficult economic era with, you know, gas prices skyrocketing, there might be more enthusiasm for the Army in general. You know, we're just going to continue to have more problems like the Abu Ghraib prison if we keep finding excuses to retain the soldiers who, you know, score low on military aptitude tests, the drug abusers, the general bad performers. I mean, ultimately, Bush's, you know, there will be no draft might be like his dad's, read my lips, no new taxes.
Yeah, what we have is we really live in a society today where the bare minimum is fast becoming the standard. And I don't care whether we're talking about school proficiency examinations or professional batteries or even athletic academic eligibility measures. What is above the one point, I mean, you think about one point above half-baked philosophies, like this, and that's going to yield to something that's not quite raw but not fit enough to be consumed without causing systemic damage. My father served in the military during World War II, and he always spoke of the military as a place of honor, hard work, and exceptional standards, and now we face a different day and time. The enemy isn't clear, as Amanda said. Because of this, it's hard to get the cream of the crop recruit these days, and people don't want to be glorified mercenaries for financially conceived military campaigns any longer. But there still has to be some kind of standard, and I think that's what the battalion commanders are saying.
Well, we'll have to see how this plays itself out. Obviously, a continued concern by the military in terms of just sheer numbers in its ranks. Here's something that hits home and, quite frankly, is near and dear to everyone who takes a step out of their house. And that is the continued problem that we see in this country of the distracted driver, oftentimes caused more often than not by the cell phone, but also people fumbling to put on makeup or trying to find the CD they want to put in the CD player. We are seeing more and more states going to movements legislatively to either restrict or ban altogether cell phone use. New research indicates that drivers talking on cell phones or fiddling with car radios sometimes perform as poorly as drunken drivers. Amy, this continues to be a growing problem, but with the popularity of cell phones, how much do you believe we're going to see an all-out ban on cell phone use while driving?
Well, first of all, Edward, could you not stereotype the women drivers by talking about putting on makeup?
I didn't say who.
Everybody
just said,
always...
I just said people.
Are you putting
on
your eyeliner while
say
you're
a
driving?
Female.
No, then you're talking about women. So
Michael Jackson puts on makeup.
That's right.
All right. Well, that I think in general, as cell phone technology gets better, I mean, honestly, it's just too tempting to, you know, Google the guy who asked you out on a Friday night as you're driving to the dry cleaner. So we're going to see a continued problem in terms of drivers being distracted. What I think should happen is that the car industry should partner with major cell phone providers to fix this problem. Maybe the car phone is part of a cell phone family plan. Headsets or cell phone speakers come standard with cars. You know, they found a way to partner with satellite radio. Why not partner with cell phone companies?
There's no question that there's a difference between whether you are holding the cell phone to your ear or whether you use a hands-free model and doing it through your earphones. And I think the key is, as we've done here in D.C. and other states, is saying you cannot just hold a cell phone while you're driving, because the difference is this. You're normally talking if you're driving with if somebody else is in the car anyway. Sometimes it would be by yourself. And that's a difference. And not holding a cell phone is basically replicating that whole act. But if you're actually concentrating, putting the phone up to your ear, it totally distracts you. There's no question about it. And I think there should be a distinction between the two.
Jeff, let me just throw this out as well, Jeff, and then pick up on your point. Oft times we see states still with problems, even if they've instituted the idea that you can't drive and talk on the phone without your headset. That does not eliminate the problem of looking down, trying to punch in a number, and some of the other distractions that come with just talking on the phone.
Right, and I agree with you. When I was a kid, my pop would drive us to school in different places with an open styrofoam cup of scalding coffee filled to the brim in his hand. Now, that's no big feat under ordinary circumstances, but he drove an old 4-speed stick shift that had no shock absorbers. Now, I don't know which was the more magnificent testament to his ambidexterity and focus, the fact that he never had an accident or the fact that he never spilled a drop of coffee. Now, I'm a gadget person. I got the whole cell phone through the radio speaker thing. I think it's kind of neat. But I think an unfocused, distracted driver is dangerous, period, even if they're just nodding their head to the beat of the music. I haven't been that bothered by drivers on cell phones as much as the years have passed. I think it used to be big, but now cell phones have become to us what that cup of coffee was to my pop. It was just part of the commuting landscape, and some people navigate well, and some people are going to be distracted with or without the phone.
Well, that's why I'm saying the car industry should you know, take this issue up and actually take it as one of their safety issues, like they did with the airbag, and create sort of more ergonomically efficient dashboards to allow for cell phone use. Because the fact of the matter is, drivers are not going to stop using their cell phones in cars. I mean, that's just not going to actually occur. So the only thing that we can do is to make it easier for drivers to use cell phones so that they're less distracted from the road.
Amy, I think we're seeing some movement in already. We're seeing in some of the manufacturers, even coming out of Detroit, where it's building the car so you can have the microphone that way, and I think that's a good movement.
Yeah. Well, you know more about the D than I do.
especially, Amy, if those women putting on the makeup are Googling the guy that asked them out on Friday.
Oh, wow.
You know, we'll get to that later on. All right, here's another
alone,
question about cars. Yeah, no, I can't, man. Here's another one about cars and driving. This is something that's very interesting. It's called the Black Box for Cars. It's about a $280 device that can show parents and, frankly, anyone who wanted to see how the person was driving in their vehicle, how, in fact, teenagers is being used are driving. There is a car that can be removed and plugged into a home computer. The parent can then download a detailed report that will show anything from seatbelt use to how far how far and fast the car traveled, its use going through signals, things of that nature. And of course, the question is whether or not the safety of a child is paramount here, or the privacy of the child is paramount here. Many teenagers, and quite frankly, some parents, are bristling at the thought that you can track every movement of their teenager while behind the wheel.
I thought it was really funny that the head of the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration went home and proposed this to his family, and his wife looked at him like he was crazy, and he said he lost that one. So I think it's going to be hard to convince people that the real issue here is developing trust between the teenager and the parent, and that's really the underlying issue.
That's exactly right. I mean, what really happens is people measure up to what's expected of them. Honestly, it's like You know, it's like the way, you know, so many black kids don't perform that well in schools. If you don't expect a lot, then people don't measure up to you know, their full potential. That's just the deal. And if you're saying you don't trust someone, it disencourages them to be trustworthy. And plus, you know what's going to happen down the line. All these smart kids, you know, these hackers that wreak the havoc on the net, they're going to find a way to tap into the black box and dismantle the sucker anyway. So I just think that we need to let this one go. I mean, or use it to threaten teens or people if warranted, meaning if there's been repeated bad behavior, use it as a you know, sort of last measure threatening device.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe it's a violation, definitely. I concur that it's a violation of trust and privacy, because parents, you know, we can be something else. I mean, it's been said that when we have problems with our kids, it's usually because we see us in them. And God forbid they had a black box going on, that kind of hookup when we were kids, because God knows what kind of things that would have been recorded when we were driving around when we were teenagers. It's just in our nature. But we all came through it. And I think if parents can learn to trust their kids, then we shouldn't question whether we allow them to go out in the car or not. We should question our raising of them. And I shudder at the thought of an obsessed parent rushing for the chip before the engine gets cool, then traumatizing their kids because they had three growls for the evening. Because I believe these chips, you can set them to growl if they go over a certain speed limit. And I think that sets a bad stage for trust.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me throw something at you guys that we didn't tell you about, but everybody's been following it. And as I said here, I was just interested in bringing this up to see what you guys thought. And that, of course, is that the jury in the Michael Jackson case is deliberating and will soon let us know whether or not Mr. Jackson will be indeed found innocent or guilty of the charges. George Curry, as you look at what's going on here, I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
Well, I mean, they expect I'm surprised that the jury is not sequestered over the weekend. They're allowed to go home, which means, although they're not supposed to, they can be exposed to news reports. And I wouldn't be surprised if we get at least one instance of that. But we expect a verdict about the middle of the week. And I think that this is a case that can go either way. I don't think Michael's off the hook. And he and Prince are also two people who use makeup. I don't know what they do while they drive or not.
Well, it's an ugly thought, Michael Jackson, for 1 week in prison without any makeup. You know, the hair is gonna go back. You know what I mean? The face is going to look crazy. He's just not going to make it. So I'm not quite sure how this one's going to happen if there isn't an acquittal.
Yeah, I think it should go either way. But regardless of the outcome, I really think that when we make this connection between makeup, automobiles, and parents, we need to make a connection here between the parents and Michael Jackson in this case, and really look at this and say that beyond what happens to Michael, we need to discuss what happens to these parents. I know throughout the course of this trial, these issues have come up. One particular part of the testimony, the parent said she woke up on the plane, everybody was asleep, and Michael Jackson was licking her child, and she didn't do anything. She just was so shocked, she went back to sleep. I think we have to really talk about parental responsibility and how we raise our children and what and who we expose our children to, and hopefully this will serve as a launching pad for that discussion beyond what happens to Mike.
And Amy Barnett, you deal with young people a lot through your magazine. I'm curious also the idea that Jeff brings up in a further extension that, quite frankly, the community at some point in time, when you know someone is beyond out of the norm, as many of us found Michael Jackson to be after a number of years, isn't it incumbent upon us after some point in time to, as a community, speak up about who our children follow, who they look to, etc.?
Well, I think that it's certainly clear that if you're witnessing your child being licked by a grown man, at that point you need to step in. But I know what you're saying. I think that we do need to establish some more positive role models for our kids, and to not be so taken by celebrities such that we allow our children or whomever to be exposed in unsafe situations. I mean, of course, Michael Jackson is a little bit anomalous. Not every kid's going to be exposed to Michael Jackson. At the same time, we do suffer an issue with positive role models in pop culture, and you know, with the sort of advent of, you know, celebrity information everywhere, and, you know, the influx of celebrity dish, I think that we're just sort of missing any kind of positive influence in that realm for our kids.
George Curry, did the community go astray to a great degree, as many have suggested, with not, if you will, calling the actions, look, et cetera, of Michael Jackson? And you can further this to R. Kelly and many other celebrities that seem to get a pass because of their popularity.
Yeah, they get passes, and I think back to the case of Mike Tyson, the whole rape case there. I mean, the African-American community tends to not challenge these entertainers and athletes in particular. And I think that's a mistake. I think it's a mistake to even put them on a pedestal in the first place. I mean, these are not normal people who have the most influence on you. It shouldn't be in your life. It should be other people. I've said often that people in my life, ladies, you know them by their first name, Miss Dot, Miss Bessie. These people in the community, the solid all-American people who have a great influence on you. And I wouldn't look to athletes and entertainers for our role models. And sadly, we do that too often.
Yes. Well, I think that there's no way that we're not going to a certain extent, pedestalize the athletes and entertainers in the world. I mean, that's just kind of where the world is going right now. I just think that black media, you know, media in general, but certainly, you know, urban media needs to be a little bit more forthcoming about the faults of our own. We're so afraid to air our own dirty laundry that we're not oftentimes honest about what's happening in our own community.
Right. And I would agree with that. And I think the conversation needs to be had. And I think that they do get their fair share of ribbing. I mean, usually it ends up being a comedian that does a take on this show. And we've kind of ribbed Michael a little bit about the makeup thing today. So everybody's talked about the appearance of Michael. They've talked about, no matter what part the song is on, the indiscrepancies and the indiscretions of R. Kelly. But what happens is we find ourselves facing a double-edged sword. These are incredibly gifted people who we look to be our heroes, because we don't have many heroes to look to. So when we find one, we put a lot on their shoulders. And then the other side of it is they are human with flaws. So where do we fall in criticizing that too?
Jeff, well, but I think that's a mistake. I think we can have something
real quick,
to do about
George.
It. Yeah, I think we can do something about it. I mean, my heroes growing up was my housing project, mm-hmm. my football coach, my high school principal. Those people had a lot more influence on me than any image of an entertainer.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree
right,
with
guys.
There's something we have to sit now. Hopefully, this kind of dialogue will inspire people to go out and do those things.
Jeff,
should I jump in too, so your segment can go even further? Come on.
No, thank you though, Amy. Amy, Jeff, and George, thank you very much. Appreciate it.